Well, good evening again. If you have a Bible with you, I'd like you to turn to the book of Daniel chapter 1. And we're going to be learning a lot out of Daniel, I hope, in this next semester as we study one of the favorite books in the Old Testament to me. Whenever I think of Daniel, I used to think of the lion's den. And then I began to think of VeggieTales. Rack Shack and Benny. I think children kind of ruined it for me a little bit. But you know what? It isn't really ruined, but I hope that what we find out in Daniel as we study is that it's a lot more than just well-known children's stories. And I believe one of the favorite times that I had as a parent was before our kids would go to bed and we would read them Bible stories. And of course, there's so many stories in the book of Daniel that we would read to our children. But for adults, this is a very significant book. It's very solid and it has a lot of really, really deep stuff in it. Not hard to understand stuff necessarily, but very important things. And as we look at the book of Daniel as a whole, Daniel, we're going to look at a few facts as we kind of set the table about Daniel and the time period in which it was written. This book is one of the last books that was written in the Old Testament. So you have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. You've got all these great books that came before it, and Isaiah. And Daniel came along kind of toward the tail end of Old Testament history. And when you think of Daniel and you look at it, and you remember some of the visions and the dreams and the strange things that are going to happen toward the end of this book, which we'll get to, it begins to look a little bit like the last book of the New Testament, Revelation. And there are some similarities. Revelation mentions the book of Daniel. Their placement in the canon and the order of books that we have and in world history makes them very significant. Because Revelation, as the last book of the Bible, is kind of like God telling his writers, this is the last thing I'm going to reveal here. Now, humans, you take it from there. And Daniel was kind of similar to that, to Judaism, because Judaism had gone through a very, very, very difficult time in the book of Daniel when it starts off. I mean, the world was a chaotic place at that time. And Daniel had one main purpose. And the purpose of the book of Daniel was to let people know that even though you're in a world whose culture is falling apart, there's hope. And out of that hope comes faithfulness, to remain faithful to God. Daniel explains so many things about the United States that it boggles your mind. It isn't specific prophecy, nothing like that. But it speaks to us in our culture today. One of the things that the book of Daniel warns us against is the temptation to worship our system of government, or to place our nationality above our spirituality. And as Americans, some of us would think, you know, well, I have to defend America every single day because people are trying to destroy America. They're trying to destroy the kingdom of God, and that is our first thing that we need to defend. And this is where Daniel found himself in the day and age in which this book was written. It's 12 chapters, which means that we'll do an introduction and part of chapter 1, maybe all of chapter 1, but I'm sure they're just going to, I'm hoping we'll make it through all 12, and I think we will. Now, if you've done a little scholarly study of Daniel, you'll see that some people say, well, Daniel wasn't the writer. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he wrote part of it and somebody else wrote some of it. Perhaps so, but they do. You can make that. The people can make an argument out of that. You bet they can. That's right, Silas. They can. One of the best sources that we have that Daniel wrote the book of Daniel was a man named Jesus Christ, who most of us are familiar with. And in Matthew 25 and in Mark 13, basically Jesus tells us that Daniel wrote the book of Daniel. So for me, I'll take that as good. I'll be good with that. I'm good with that. One of the reasons why people think it couldn't have been Daniel was because the prophecies and the things that he had written about later on in those visions that he had in chapter 7 through 12, they came true in such precise fashion that the only way they could have been written was after the fact. But I think you and I know that when God gives his vision to his prophets, which Jesus clearly tells us, Daniel was one of God's prophets, that God is not unambiguous. He's specific. He drills it down to great detail. So there's no doubt that when God gives his vision to Daniel, it's going to probably be just exactly the way God said it was going to be, and world history will happen the way it happens. Now, here's the beautiful thing about Daniel, and you'll find this too. A lot of people say, well, they'll interpret the last dreams of the book of Daniel in different ways. And I even read something the other day that said, this is the Daniel chapter 11 is the fulfillment of Barack Obama's presidency. And you can do that until the cows come home. You can do that all day long. You can do that from people have. They've done that for centuries, saying, oh, this is the end times because Daniel says this. Well, you know what? The cool thing about Daniel is it's universal enough that it applies to anybody who's living in a culture where you are a minority and you're swimming upstream against the current. It applies. No matter what time frame you live, no matter what time period you live. And the beautiful thing about Daniel in the book of Revelation is, like the cathedral sang in that song, you know, I've read the back of the book and we win. It's all going to be okay. That's where the hope is. And you can look at our country today and you can just see all of the going back and forth and the vitriol and the hatred and the this and that. And it just looks like sometimes, some ways, our government is falling apart. But you know something? God is still in control. And as Christians, God's kingdom will rule. It wins in the end. And that's the side I want to be on. That's the side I want to be on. So about the year 520 BC, that's probably about the latest date that I could ever find it. Might have been written in 535 BC. It was written a long time ago. So if you were to say that today, 2018, let's just pretend for a moment that this was the year Jesus was crucified, then when would Daniel have been written if you backed up the calendar? It would have been written shortly after the time that Columbus discovered America. So that much time passed between the book of Daniel and the crucifixion. About that much time, approximately, give or take a few decades. So you can get a sense of the time frame between these two events. And in those intervening years, those 550 to 600 years, boy, there was a lot that happened to the Jewish people, the precursors of Christianity. A lot was going on. So if Daniel, and I believe he was the author, it was probably authored somewhere around 535, 520 BC, give or take a little bit. Not exactly the most important fact of all, but just to let you know. The book of Daniel is actually written in two languages, which is very unusual. Some books of the Bible are. This happens to be one of them. And the first first chapter of Daniel is actually written in Hebrew. Chapters, I believe it's 2 through 6, are written in Aramaic, and 7 through 12 are written in Hebrew. And in fact, you could divide Daniel kind of into two or three sections, actually. You have there's two parts of it. Two sections, I would say. 1 to 6, and that is going to be the stories of Daniel and his friends. And then 7 to 12 is Daniel's visions that he has and those crazy, cool dreams that he has that we're going to talk about. So those are basically the way that Daniel is divided up in those two sections. And the neat thing about Daniel is that its message is universal for us today. Because in a day and age where The church is threatened by a lawsuit from the gay rights movement almost daily in this country, where we're threatened with being put in prison if we pray in a public school. You can go down the list and think of ways that Christians are being persecuted today. Not as bad as like they are in Turkey or other places where what is the term that Pastor Bruner is in prison for? Christianizing, I think, is actually the word. You know, he's put in prison because in Turkey he was trying to Christianize people, so they threw him in prison. We're not quite to that point here yet, but you can see a dominant culture that's kind of headed that direction. And so for people that are living in that situation today, for people that lived in that situation in the Middle Ages, for people that lived that way in the first century, there's a relevant message in the book of Daniel, and that's to have hope. And out of that hope comes your faithfulness and remain faithful to God. So as we begin the book of Daniel, one of the backdrop of the book of Daniel is the Empire of Babylon. And Babylon was a pretty impressive little place, little empire that sprung up on the world stage. And it's kind of hard to see in this little picture here. That little red spot right there was the beginning of the Babylonian Empire. So I want to tell you a little bit about, like, an anchor friend of mine used to say, elsewhere in the news, if we step out of the Bible for a minute and let's look at the rest of the world and what was going on in the 6th century in the world at the time of Daniel. So let's step out of the Bible for a minute and see this backdrop and what's going on. One of the things that was going on in the time of the book of Daniel was in Mexico, the Mayan culture was almost near its peak. It was thriving, and they were building those weird step pyramids and doing all kinds of crazy things with technology of the day. The Mayan civilization was near its zenith at the time that Daniel was in the lion's den. There was a man in the region, what we know as China, named Confucius. Do you know Confucius? He was a philosopher and a wise man who espoused a new kind of morality for the nation in which he lived. And he was heavy into his writings and his teachings and was becoming well known kind of on the world stage at that time. There was also a young guy who went by his stage name, Buddha. And he lived in the region of India. And he was bringing to the world his message of the middle way. Because in Indian culture and cultures along in that area, or Pakistan and Afghanistan and some of those areas, where there were two ways of thinking. One of them was asceticism, which was, you know, minimalist lifestyle. You know, if you were going to drive a car, make sure it had three wheels, not four. I mean, it was just like get by in the bare essentials that you possibly could get by. I'm just exaggerating a little bit, but it was very strict. And then on the other side of it was this lifestyle that said, eat, drink, and be merry, because we're all going to die. And so Buddha came along and said, no, there's a middle way. There's a way down the middle that, you know, combines the best of both worlds. Take it for what it's worth. But people still practice Hinduism and Buddhism today, so it's still around. There was a man that was living in Greece who was another philosopher, and this was in the early days of the Grecian Empire. It wasn't even really known as that. And his name was Aesop, and he was writing stories like The Tortoise and the Hare. And he was writing stories like The Goose That Laid the Golden Egg. You remember those stories? You might have heard these before. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. The Fox and the Hen or something like that? I don't remember. Aesop was writing, he was a prolific writer, and I think there was something like 300 or so of Aesop's fables. Those were being written during the time of Daniel. Something else that was going on was in Egypt, the Phoenicians, who saw themselves as the Steve Jobs of the world. They were very technologically advanced for their time, but they did it in ships and shipbuilding. They built a ship that sailed all the way from the Gulf of Suez down around the Horn of Africa, came all the way up here back to the Nile River, the mouth of the Nile River. These people were celebrated as geniuses because they were able to do that and discover that you could actually sail all the way around Africa and come back again. And so Pharaoh Necho, the second, who was the self-appointed deity of Egypt at the time, said, hey, you know what we should do?
We should just like build a canal between here and there.
Then we could open up the Gulf of Suez to the Mediterranean. And he set about digging with shovels and old, 5th century BC shovels, one at a time. Never finished it. It wasn't finished until the 1800s is when the Suez Canal was finished. But Necho back then, during the time of Daniel, was building a canal. In fact, Pharaoh Necho had to take time out from building the canal to go fight the Babylonians. He was in the middle of building a canal. Because the Babylonians were starting to take over the world. So that was like the headlines of the day. But the problem was that Egypt also wanted to take over the world. And so Egypt said, we're pretty strong, we're pretty powerful, and we got these really, really smart people named the Phoenicians, and I think we can do this. So they said, who's going to partner with us? And the Assyrians said, we'll partner with you. And the Babylonians on the other side said, who's going to partner with us? And the Chaldean tribe said, we will. And the Persians said, we will. And the Medes said, we will. And so then there was this big clash. But if you notice something about the way that God built the world, that makes total sense when you look at it on a map like this, is I want to show you something. Egypt is down here, all right? Strong, powerful nation. Babylonia is up here, which would later be the Medes and the Persians. But look at this little funnel, this little neck right in between here, right? It's the little connecting link between the two. And guess whose land that belonged to? It was Israel's land, right? It was God's promised land. Now, do you think that God could have promised them the middle of the desert? Mm-mm. He promised them this fertile crescent. And why do you think that is? Because all the superpowers of the world, that was the only interstate that linked the two. They all had to travel through there. They go to the Via Maria. We saw that in the Ray Vanilam series. That was a big highway. And so if Egypt was going to conquer Babylon, they had to go through Israel. And if Babylon was going to conquer Egypt, they had to go through Israel. Israel was like the middle of the highway. But here's the cool thing about it. Was that when the Romans took it over, and by the time that Jesus came and was ready to spread the gospel to the whole world, guess what? The Romans had built this huge roads, system of roads, hundreds of thousands of miles of roads all over Europe, all the way up here, and then also all the way down here through Egypt and all the way over here to Libya and all those places. The places that had the most people in the world. And guess what? When they met at Passover, they came to this crossroads of the world, and from there they dispersed to all corners of the world. And God said to the Romans, thank you very much for building my highways. That allowed me to spread the gospel. And to the Egyptians, thank you very much for building all your highways. That allowed us to spread the gospel. All of this was part of God's plan. So in Daniel's day, before there were Romans, in Daniel's day, the land that the Israelites held was very important, a very important piece of land. And so in the time of Daniel, Israel, things weren't going so good. They were divided. Remember, there was the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. There was Israel and there was Judah. Israel had already been wiped off and taken captive. They were gone. The Assyrians kind of took them over. And Judah was just hanging on for dear life. Do you remember Josiah? King Josiah. I believe he was, Thomas, correct me if I'm wrong, or anybody, the last good king of Israel, of Judah. He was the last good guy. That's why parents named their children Josiah and not Jehoiakim. Right? Yeah, because Josiah was a good guy. He had reforms in 2 Kings that tell us that nobody else had done before as a king of Judah. And one of the important things that he did was he reinstituted something that had been dead. I mean, dead for over 100 years. And you wouldn't think this would be dead if you were a Jew. But it was for hundreds of years. Do you know what that was? What? Part of it, exactly. But it was Passover. The Jews, they Passover, smash over. What do I want to do with Passover? Passover, nothing. They were not celebrating Passover for hundreds of years. And Josiah instituted those reforms and said, we're going to start Passover because he read the law. They read the law out loud and said, hey, we're not doing this. Let's do it. And Daniel was a young boy, probably not more than 10 years old at the time. And he's seeing all these reforms take place. And he's seeing that this can be good. It can be a good thing. And Passover was reinstituted for the first time, and there was great joy in Judah when they celebrated Passover. Can you believe that? It'd be like if we just forgot to go to church for 100 years. Church, merch, whatever. And somebody came back and said, no, we got to get back together again. Can you imagine that? But it happened. It happened with the Jewish culture. So Daniel's growing up with this. Well, you know, Josiah was a good king, but here's the thing. He knew that his land was prized by these superpowers to the north and superpowers to the south. And at some point in time, he felt like Israel had better, or Judah had better get aligned with the winner, or we're going to be toast. And so he chose the Chaldeans, he chose the Medes and the Persians side of it. And what ended up happening was Pharaoh Necho, who we read about in 2 Kings, wanted to come to the help of the Assyrians because the Babylonians were kicking the Assyrians right to left. They took over their capital of Nineveh, which Jonah would visit. They kicked him out of Nineveh, kicked him out of Haran, and they kicked him all the way to Carchemish. And so Necho said, we got to get this back. And so they came with a vengeance, 40,000 people, and they came up this little highway, Via Maria, right along the coast from Egypt. They came right up here. And so Josiah went out to meet them in battle because he thought that he'd better stop this from happening. And so he took an Israelite army and he went up there at Megiddo. Remember what happened? Josiah was killed. Poor Josiah. Now after Josiah, the people of Israel, they chose their next king and probably didn't do a very good job because they picked Jehoahaz, which was the younger of the sons. And Necho was pretty irritated with Israel by this time because they tried to stop his advance to Babylon. So Necho took Jehoahaz and took him into captivity and brought him to Memphis or to Alexandria, down here by the Nile, and put him in prison, killed him. He was king for 3 months. And then Necho said, I'll choose Israel's next king. Then he will be a puppet of mine, and I can control him, and he won't be fighting on the side of the Babylonians. And he did. And he picked this guy named Jehoiakim. And Jehoiakim was king when Daniel was stepping onto the world stage. Now Jehoiakim, I like to think of him as the biker king. Okay? Jehoiakim was a rebel from day one. He wished he was Pharaoh Necho. He wished he was deity. He thought he was. He just basically destroyed all the reforms that Josiah made. And they were back to doing some pretty bad stuff. And Jehoiakim was tattooed all over his body. He said, you know what? The only thing God gives us is light. But hey, I have shiny gold. And it gives off more light than God gives us. He literally thought he was better than God. And this is a theme that comes up time and time again in the book of Daniel. It's a theme that comes up no matter what country you live in. If there's human beings in that country, this is a theme that comes up time and time and time again. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But in Daniel's time, it was very difficult. Jehoiakim was a nasty, nasty guy. And, of course, God's anger burned against Judah. And you know what was going to happen is that Nebuchadnezzar had a score to settle with Necho. And he said, you know, Necho might have his puppet state in Israel and he might have, you know, a lot of Palestine. He might have all this land here, but I'm going to get him. And so they met in battle. Babylonians came up to Carchemish. The Egyptians came up to Carchemish and they met in this battle in the year, was it 605? I think 605, 606. And they had a terrible, terrible battle. And who won? Babylonia did. Nebuchadnezzar II, who led the army. And Nebuchadnezzar became famous just like Julius Caesar did when he was fighting in Germania. And so Nebuchadnezzar rose to power and he kicked Egypt all the way back to Egypt. And so they pursued them out of Carchemish and they boom, 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 all the way back down here to Egypt. And they really put them in their place. And Necho, from that point on, was a loser. He didn't, you know, there wasn't anything he could do right the rest of his time. And Babylon was now the world leader. Well, guess what Nebuchadnezzar did on his way back? As they were coming back through, they said, "Oh, by the way, we have a score to settle with Jehoiakim, who was appointed by Necho." And they took a lot of people from Babylon, or from Jerusalem, back to Babylon in exile. And they said, "You think you're something? No, you're coming with us." And so they packed up a lot of the rulers, the rich people, the financial geniuses, the scientists, the royal court, the kings, the people that didn't put up a fuss and tried to fight whom they killed, and they deported them to Babylon, to Susa, in the area in Babylon. And guess who was part of that? Daniel. Yeah. Daniel would have been about 17 years old, so there probably isn't too many people in this room that would be younger than Daniel was. He was just a kid, but he'd lived a lot. He'd lived through a lot. So imagine that Minnesota gets power. No, imagine California. California becomes its own country and comes and sacks South Dakota and takes you from your house, leaves your house behind, you can't even grab your clothes, puts you in a cattle truck, drives you to California and puts you in a resettlement camp. And you're in the middle of Death Valley. Yeah. In more ways than one. Right. How would that make you feel? Everything that you had before is left behind. The only thing you have are some of the people that you might recognize in the cattle truck that's with you. You don't know. Where do I start? Where do I go from here? And I'm living in a Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm living in a society that has no regard for God. It's just every man for himself. How would you feel in a situation like that? I tell you, I wouldn't feel very good. That was not at very much different than, in fact, it was probably worse for Daniel. They were put into ox carts or some kind of contraption for 2 months. Yes.
Actually, Babylon was famous for putting rings in noses and ears and dragging.
I was afraid you were going to bring that up.
All the rings and dragging people through.
Yeah, there were.
Out.
I had a picture of that and I took it out. Yeah, no, they were brutal with the people that they wanted to turn into their slaves and their workers, you know. Daniel was, I think some scholars will say that he was from the line of David, so he had a little bit of a royalty with him, but he was part of a higher class, not necessarily richer, but just a more informed class, and so he was put in a special designation. But this was a long haul. Could you imagine being put into an ox cart in Belfouche and taken by ox to Calgary, Alberta, and then all the way back down to Spokane, Washington? That's about as far as they had to go. It took them about 2 months probably with all these people, and you might get a glass of water a day and maybe a piece of bread, not knowing what your future was going to be. This is where Daniel found himself with the people that were with him, because Nebuchadnezzar wanted to teach Pharaoh Necho a lesson. And so they went into exile and they took them away into Babylon. A strange culture where people wore different clothes, spoke a different language, ate different foods, had different gods, plural. It was a very difficult time. This is where the nose picture was. But it was a mass exodus of people as they were put into exile. Babylon was probably the center of the world at that time, a great big city. It's the largest archaeological exploration that's in the Middle East region right now, if I'm not mistaken, like 2,000 acres, something like that. The ancient city of Babylon. It captivated people like Saddam Hussein, who felt like he wanted to rebuild the Hanging Gardens, and he wanted to make Babylon, restore it to its glory, and felt like he was appointed by Allah to do that. So it's had this mystique about it for thousands of years. And so then Daniel finds himself in this place, and it would be very frightening and very, very scary. It's not VeggieTales at all. It's a lot different than that. And you're surveying and you're looking at this culture and you're wondering, what's going to become of me? What will happen to me and my friends? How will I stay faithful to God when I have no place to celebrate Passover? I have no place to make sacrifices. I have no temple to go to. God, what am I supposed to do? You took everything away from me. How do I move on? How do I survive? It's the same thing in our culture today. I want to tell you this story, and then we'll start on a little bit of the first chapter, and then we'll finish. Back in the days of York College, Kathy and Jim remember this, because I was at York with them. We had a group called Friends, a singing group. There were three of us. And we traveled on the summers recruiting students for York College at different Christian camps. And I'll not forget the one that we went to in Kearney, and some of you might have been there, to Kearney, Nebraska. They had a Nebraska youth camp, youth Christian camp. And we got there one day, and they were doing an exercise in that afternoon, and they invited us to come along before we sang that night after supper. So it was the afternoon. We came along, and they took us to the banks of the Platte River. The Platte River in Nebraska, which it's a very wide river, but very shallow. And there was a channel of the Platte River that went real close to camp. And it was probably 2 feet deep at the deepest point. But the exercise for the senior boys and girls was to line up and walk across the river. And so when you're looking at the river, it looks peaceful and calm. And you step in and you're okay. You're up to your ankles. Then you're up to your knees. Then you're almost up to your waist. By that time, the current starts to affect you a little bit. And with every time you pick up your foot, you can feel your left foot kind of move into your right foot because the current's pulling it that way. And then you have to go like this. And then you go like this. And then you have to make an effort to move back that way. It's very, very, very difficult. It's not easy. It looked easy, but it wasn't. They pulled this rope across. And they said, now, we want you to just grab onto the rope and pull yourself across the river. Boy, that was a lot easier. That we could handle. That was not that difficult. And this wasn't this picture, but it's an idea. And the camp director said, now, the river is like your culture that you live in today. You can't change the flow of the river, but you can change the effect that it has on you. Hold on to the rope. That's your guide. That represents the Word of God. That's all of God's promises. If you grab onto the rope, the current's going to try to bring you away, but you can make it all the way across. And so, brothers and sisters, the thing about the book of Daniel is it's a warning to us. And I don't know how this is going to hit you, but it kind of hit me between the eyes. As a Christian, we're trying to cross a river that looks easy to cross. But when we're hip deep in culture of the day, that current is going to try to carry you away. The easy thing to do is to just drift away. Takes no effort to drift away. It takes effort to swim against the current. If you don't feel every day like you're swimming against the current in some way, you need to ask yourself, am I being the Christian that I need to be today? Because the current is going to try to carry you far, far away. It takes effort to swim against the current. It was not easy for Daniel to swim against the current that he found himself in. It was a lot harder than I can even imagine. But think about your life and those times in your life when you feel persecuted or you feel slighted or you feel left out or made fun of or ridiculed because of your faith. Or maybe not. You have an opportunity to share something that's happened to you that's good and give credit to God, but you're too afraid to. You have an opportunity to do some of the things that Jesus told you, and you said, you know, Jesus, those are nice things, but just not for me right now. I don't really want to do that right now. As Christians, we will always be in the minority, won't we? And Daniel teaches us that we're in the minority in a dominant culture that's trying to get us to drift away. And if we're not holding on to that rope, and that rope represents hope, and the rope represents faith that we're not going to fail, that God's going to deliver us. So ask yourself today, are you swimming or are you drifting? Because you can't do both. And if you have been drifting, it might be time to start swimming. And how do I know if I'm swimming or not? I'll tell you, pray about it. Ask God to show you those times when you can actually start swimming. And He will. I guarantee you, He will. So Babylon was this wild and crazy place. Daniel chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, he was the tattooed one, Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, and we'll just go through the first little part of it and then we'll quit. And I'm getting old, so I have to do this. I'm not as old as Jim, but I'm old, so... In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. And these he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. And there were plenty of gods to go around in Babylon. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials who lived in this magnificent palace, to bring some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language, the literature of the Babylonians. He was going to teach them all about Babylonian culture. Okay? So the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. After 3 years, it wasn't a PhD, but it was pretty close. And then they were going to serve the king. Okay? Now, who's Daniel served for much of his young life? The God of Israel. Now he's going to be asked to serve the king. Well, among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, a.k.a. Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Right. They were renamed. See, the Babylonians took your name away. And you think that's kind of weird? We still do it today. Who's heard of Muhammad Ali, the boxer? What was his given name? Yeah. So why did he go to Muhammad Ali? Because when he converted to Islam, they gave him that name. Who knows one of the most prolific scorers in the NBA, played center for the Los Angeles Lakers? Lou Alcindor, you said it, right? When he converted to Islam, what was his name? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's how he is in the NBA Hall of Fame, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We still do it today. One of the most important things they can change to make sure that you understand where you are is your name. And so that's what they did. They gave these guys the names that we remember, you know, the Rakshak and Benny version. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were their Hebrew names, and they were changed. The chief official in verse 7 gave them new names: to Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But listen to this next verse. This is interesting. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with learning the language, with the culture of the Babylonians, the ways of the Babylonians, with... What did he choose to not do? He chose not to defile himself with the royal food. And he asked the chief officials for permission not to defile himself in this way. Why do you think that was? You know, it seemed to me like Daniel would have revolted against everything. I don't want to read your books. I don't want to learn your language. I don't want to change my name. But especially, I don't want to eat your food. You know, Daniel had it pretty good. He just going to get a government job. He was going to learn about the language of the Babylonians. He was going to learn about their books. But he didn't want to eat their food. Now, what are Jews and food, right? There's an issue there, right? There were certain things that weren't kosher. Okay, so... the wine that they were serving wasn't kosher. They were feeding them bacon for breakfast. No, I'm Jewish, I don't do that. Defiling oneself with food is something that goes inside of you, that defiles you. The language and the culture of stuff is that you can take that in and you can say, yeah, right, but there's a God in heaven. But defiling yourself with food kind of takes it to a different level. And that's what he chose to take his stand on. Now, Daniel didn't just raise his fist and saying, "Stop the proceedings, I refuse." No, he asked for permission. He did it in a godly way. And I think, God, man, this 17-year-old kid, I can learn a lot from this kid, right? And God saw this. And so God did something cool in the next chapter. He, God, had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, he said, "Well, I'm afraid my lord the king, who's assigned your food and drink, why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would have my head because of you. You're asking me to commit suicide here, dude." And Daniel is like, okay, I'm swimming against the current on this one. Okay, do I swim harder or do I say, all right, fine? Mm-mm. Daniel swims a little harder. Why? Because he knows that rope of faithfulness is there. And he says, even if I die, and you'll see this attitude in Daniel, it doesn't matter because God will still be on my side. Even if you die of embarrassment, God will still be on your side. Even if you die physically because of your faith, God will still be there. Daniel knew that. And so he doubles down. He says, you know, he said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed, he said, number 12, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink." Now, this isn't a vegetarian plea. You know, I used to get confused with this a lot. I thought, okay, so this is saying that vegetarianism is the way to go. Not necessarily, because it didn't necessarily, the word for the vegetables there doesn't necessarily mean that it was strictly vegetables. But it was stuff that was not considered unclean to the Hebrews. And they didn't defile themselves with the high-priced wine and the fat-filled bacon and all of that stuff that I like. Verse 13, "Compare our appearance." And so he agreed to do this and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. So what's the lesson here? Anybody? What's that? Definitely. Yep. God worked. Did you think that they had this glow about them? You know, this like, boy, their skin was clear. Nobody had pimples anymore. What was it about their appearance that made them different? What do you think it was? What's that? Their spirit was probably, yes, don't you think they felt courage? Yeah. There was a noticeable difference between what God did to them because of the 10-day test and the others. You know, I think I feel like, and you can sure disagree with me, that God intervened here and caused some kind of a change with them because of their faith. It was enough of a change, metaphysical, physical, I don't know, emotional, spiritual, enough that they couldn't deny it. They couldn't deny it. And so all of the other people that were in training school with them, yeah, they blew it for all the other guys because then they couldn't eat any more bacon or whatever it was. The guard took away their choice food and they were to drink just what these four men had. And to these four young men, what did the Babylonians give them? Nothing. What did God give them? What? Knowledge and understanding, intelligence of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. God is raising up Daniel to be his guy in this crooked and depraved culture because God saw Daniel's faith and his ability to swim hard against the current or not let go of that rope. This is who Daniel was, 17 years old, 18 maybe, 20 on the outside, young kid. Bold, courageous, standing up to a king who, if he wakes up grumpy, you're dead. Wow. This guy's got nothing to lose. Daniel is just like, he's sold out. Yes, Kat.
Well, I think you said God thought his ability to swim against the current.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just thought his, at least willing to try to swim against the current.
Because unquestionably.
His heart and
Sure. One of the... He absolutely did want to do it God's way. That's exactly right. And he had the courage to do that. You know, in a lot of ways, you think about this, that... I don't know. What do you think? Daniel, you know, what was he demonstrating to God at this point in time? Same thing that you show to God? Do we have the ability to do that? To do this? You see, it always intrigued me why Daniel was able to assimilate all this knowledge about the Babylonian culture, and there was a greater purpose in that. And that was okay. Food was not okay. This was okay to God. Because God had a bigger purpose for him. And here's the thing. He could take in all of that and deflect it. Now, it's like saying, okay, I can read that book and I can spit out the bones. Right? I'm a mature enough Christian that I can read that and I can handle that message. Sometimes it's a little tricky there. Maybe a little trickier than that. But God had a greater purpose for these guys. And... I don't need to wade into those waters that I don't need to be wading in. But with, you know, if you get put in those kind of waters, do the godly thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I'm not telling you to go out and watch a bunch of bad TV shows, you know, and assimilate that knowledge and say what a terrible thing that is, because we don't have to wade in that water. But if God puts you there someplace where you can swim against the stream, you can demonstrate the ability to do that, then you can deflect all those things that come your way. I think, yeah, go ahead, Nathan.
Well, as you said at the beginning of class, up to this point, Daniel had been through quite a bit. And so we're not giving the details, we can just look at history and see where it was and certain things were. But he surmised
yes, that's right.
And so sometimes when we find ourselves in a situation that we have to make a choice, well, how well did we make the right choice and all the other little decisions along the way? And so it becomes important, not just with the big life-changing circumstances and choices, but every little choice along the way.
Yeah. Right. Good thought. All right, so as we have paused here in the middle of our week to study a little bit of the Bible, what I would love for us to take away from this tonight is to understand and appreciate how Daniel made an active effort to swim, not to drift. And I hope that we do the same thing. Swim tomorrow. Don't drift. If you got to swim tomorrow, swim. I mean, and don't be sucked into all of the stuff that you see on the news and all of the stuff you see in the movies and all of the stuff you read in the paper, unless it's the Beacon. I mean, that's a good paper. Anyway, no, whatever culture sends at you, don't be drawn into that. Swim against it when the opportunity presents itself. Somebody says, isn't that a great movie or a great show? And you're like, you know, I'm not sure. I didn't see it. It just didn't seem like my kind of movie. Swim. Swim. Yeah.
I think we need to be careful with what we choose to do or... we kept talking about the ability to do this. Well...
Yeah.
And so we have, even if we don't have the ability, we can still do it because we have the ability.
Yeah, it makes it so much cooler when, you know, God's doing it.
Yeah. And so we can't just give up because we think,
yeah,
we don't have the ability to do that. Because God does.
God, yeah. Yep. Cool. Exactly right. It's not like the Moses syndrome. But God, I can't do that. I can't speak. I can't do. I can't stand in front of people. But God said, I'll do it. I'll make you able to do those things. So next week, we're going to see what happens when a king wakes up grumpy because he hadn't slept all night. A very, very interesting little chapter of the Bible. Longest chapter, I think, in Daniel, but I think we'll make it through. But it's very, very interesting, and I hope that we meet back here again next Wednesday to tell that story. So thanks again, and let's pray. Heavenly Father, bless us as we dismiss here tonight. Be with our families, be with those that are traveling or on the road in places where they might be in peril, that you would keep them safe and guard them. Comfort those of our number, Lord, that are ailing or sick, or we ask that you would make them recover as quickly as possible so that we can fellowship with them once again and enjoy their company. And God, we thank you for the wonderful insight that you gave to Daniel and that's written down for us to read here and how relevant it is in any culture. And just help us to have the courage to swim this week. And I guess more than anything, God, as scary as it sounds, give us an opportunity tomorrow to swim and let's see where it takes us. Thank you for your promises that never fail. In Jesus' name, amen.